views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Start the adventure. Live the dream. International living, exploring, investing, and retiring. Light on Living Abroad shines the spotlight on how life can be better with life abroad. We'll explore owning investment properties in emerging markets, how to manage those assets effectively to increase your wealth. You'll learn the important steps involved in buying, renting, and building overseas. With safety lifestyle lessons and guidance to where to enjoy the most beautiful scenic locations, you'll discover where your best international investment property is waiting for you. Light on Living Abroad takes you there. Welcome on board.
Everyone, welcome to Light on Living Abroad. I'm Lisa Berry, and today, as we continue our wonderful exploration of beautiful countries and where to live and where to invest and where to retire, we have Dean Studebaker on with us. And as before, he is the COO of Compass Group International, number one real estate consulting firm in Costa Rica, a featured guest speaker throughout Latin and Central America. And he is based in Costa Rica and Thailand and is currently working with developers throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, specializing in working with developers, investors, and brokerages from the Latin America to Asia on projects from tax-free zones, hotels, to high-density affordable housing. Dean is a regular host for HGTV's House Hunters International, the number one real estate TV show for HGTV Network. I said that so fast, I stumbled over it myself. HGTV Network. And finally, he's currently working on a new TV show, which actually is out on YouTube there, Living on $1,000 a Month. So, my mouthful, everything there. Welcome, Dean.
God, you need a margarita now, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'm a wine drink, but I would take one.
I don't know, man. I always sound so important after you introduce me. It's amazing. I always just, you know, sound so much bigger than I really am.
This would be friendly reminders of all. You know what it is? It's because all the work you do is so much fun, and it seems to be so smoothly running. It doesn't seem like all these work, but yes, you really do all those things, and they're actually really nice. I love that you do the affordable housing. I know I don't know that we've ever touched on that too much before in our other segments, but when I do want to jump right into this, I'm just jumping right in. Affordable housing. Why did you choose that, and what role do you play, and how big of a change has that done since you even started working with affordable housing?
Well, affordable housing is usually done, it depends. We can do affordable housing through the government, through the governments of countries, or you do affordable housing through private development. And what this basically stems from is a lot of the countries, let's just use, for example, I'll just use Costa Rica as an example. Costa Rica went through a period of time where they built a lot of homes. A lot of them were built by the government, and a lot of them were built by private developers years and years ago. And as time has grown on and their population has expanded, they've had to increase their affordable housing overall development or provide more affordable housing. Now, the government runs programs that are government-sponsored affordable housing, and then private companies, private developers come in and they also do affordable housing. And affordable housing in every country is different. I get asked a lot of times, well, how much is a house in country X? Well, it's this amount. And then some people are like, well, what is it like in then another country? And it's like you give them a number, and they're like, well, they try and relate everything based off of what they know in the United States and Canada, and it doesn't make, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to them. When you tell somebody that they can get, you know, a 1,000-square-foot condominium on the ocean for $200,000 or $250,000, they think they don't grasp that. or you try and tell them, well, compare it to what I'm paying for here in Toronto. Well, I can't give you that answer. because it's apples to oranges. But for affordable housing projects, they're usually designed for the quote, the citizens of that country more so than expats. But a lot of expats or people that look to move to countries that will buy affordable housing projects. And affordable housing projects are usually very high density projects. I have one project, for example, that I'm helping get facilitated. That's 1,600 homes. These homes are all about 700.
Oh my
God. And, there's two options, 700 to 900 square feet, and they'll be in the range of $75,000 to $95,000. And in this part of the country, those are considered very affordable. Then there's other projects we do where the houses will only be $30,000 to $40,000. And a lot of those houses are subsidized by the government itself. So it just depends. I like getting involved in them more on the private side than on the government side. Mainly because, like anything, when you deal with any government, you just always have to deal with a lot of red tape. So, but there are a lot more developers that are deciding to change from building these, big, beautiful condominium projects. There's a way for them to do affordable housing projects and honestly make actually more money.
Oh, Dean, that was actually my next question. So are the affordable housing that's private, would that be something that, say, an expat would they just purchase to invest to rent out or do that? Or B, would they buy it to invest in to live in?
No, both, actually. There's investors that buy affordable housing projects they'll come in and they'll buy a block of 6, 7, 8, 10 maybe, and then they'll just turn those into rentals. So people do that. And then you have expats that will actually live in some of the affordable housing projects that are developed. So it just all depends. There's affordable housing projects that are on close to the beach, that are inside the capital cities. They're spread out throughout the country. These could be, the houses that we build in some of these, I'd be just fine living in them. I mean, they're amazing. So it provides a whole variety. I mean, they're geared towards the local population, but if a couple of gringos want to buy one, sure, no problem.
Okay. It's funny. I've introduced you before and I've read that, and I think we touched on it here and there, but that's something that I know when I'm talking to Will, your partner, and we're talking about in Thailand there, I don't think that's ever come up. So that one really stuck out to me and I thought, hey, wait a second. So now you say high density, it's not going to be the same high density that I would experience maybe, or whether it be in Toronto or New York or something. Is there high density? When you say high density, is it just they're in high density version, or they're really truly a lot of people?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, high density again is kind of subjective term. I mean, what's high density in, let's say, Mexico City or in Hong Kong is a lot different than, let's say, high density inside Los Angeles.
Right.
Every city has their own version, but in Costa Rica, Panama, Belize, any of the Central American countries, high density would be, basically you might have shared walls. You might have a shared wall, okay. Or if you don't have a shared wall, we're talking about maybe a 2-foot line, maybe 3 at the most, in between houses that are just stacked up, one after another, after another, after another, with very little lot. So you're not the footprint of the property is basically the house and where you can park your car, and that's it. There's no yard, there's no front backyard, there's no side yard. So you're just kind of stacked up right on top of each other, all next to each other.
Right. Now, also, too, in talking about owning and working with investors and some things like that, does one own 100%, 50%, or what kind of ownership do they gain when they purchase as an investor?
They own 100%. Yeah. I mean, every country that I work in will be a feasible country, meaning that, they'll have title, they'll have 100% ownership of the property. And that pretty much is the only types of countries that we like working in. There are other countries around the world that you have to have local participation. You'll have to set up a corporation and have a local citizen of that country on that corporation to be able to buy. Or let's say, for example, like in Thailand, which isn't necessarily a fee simple country, but let's say a developer in Thailand, he'll build, let's say, 100 units. And of those 100 units, he'll get a concession from, or he'll get like a concession more or less from the government that says that he's going to sell 40% of his 100. So let's say he's going to reserve 40 units to be sold to foreign foreign buyers. Mm-hmm. That will allow the foreign buyer to be able to come in there, buy, and actually have a deed to that particular property and not be required to have a local citizen or a naturalized citizen of that country be a part of the corporation that purchases. So that's how they get around it in a lot of Asian countries. They have set aside within the development that allow a certain percentage, whatever the developer wants. If the developer is building a project, he's building 100 and he thinks that 70% of those can be sold to foreigners, they'll ask the government to get a set aside that will allow 70 of those units to be purchased by foreigners without having to go through all the big restrictions. So every country is different. Every country has different rules. But for the most part, we try and operate in fee simple countries where you're able to get whoever buys is doesn't, one, need a local person. They'll need a local corporation. And anywhere in the world, you got to get a corporation in that country to purchase. But once you have that, you're not required to have a natural citizen be a part of that corporation.
So when you do purchase then in Costa Rica, do you become a citizen?
When you have a corporation in most countries around the world, if you're not a natural citizen of that country, you're a foreigner. If you mm-hmm. buy a corporation or incorporate in that country, that corporation pretty much guarantees and gives you the rights of a citizen in that country. So you're then able to own property, buy and sell and own property, or start a business, operate a business, utilize all the advantages, bank accounts, pay their insurance systems in the country, et cetera, et cetera. So once you have the corporation, you pretty much can do anything or get anything you want done that you would as if you were a Costa Rican citizen yourself.
Okay, so great. So now moving backwards, and how can they open up a corporation? What are the stipulations to opening one?
Yeah, no, it's when I always try and stress to people when I talk about this stuff is so extremely easy to get done. It seems sometimes a lot more complicated than it really needs to be, but like I tell people, buying real estate in the United States and then even in Canada sometimes can be 10 times more complicated than purchasing a property in a foreign country. So when your listeners are listening, they think maybe this is like this big daunting task to get something done in a foreign country. I highly, highly stress to them that can be the case if you work with an idiot, but since you're working with us, then you're in good hands. So, but it's really simple. I mean, you can get a couple of real estate brokers in the United States together to try and take care of a transaction, and that can turn into a total nightmare with all the different moving back and forth pieces that sometimes have to go on. Picking up a property in a foreign country, as long as you work with the right person, and that person, someone such as myself, has a lawyer that we work with that will completely A to Z take care of everything. There's virtually less work sometimes on foreign purchases than purchasing, just going and purchasing a new house down the street from where you currently live in the U.S. right now.
Right. And you know what's funny? So between all these wonderful conversations with you and Will, you guys are honestly making it sound seamless, and I'm loving this. Now, I do want to ask, so you've clearly traveled beyond more than Costa Rica and Bangkok. So where are the other places that came close that you would have, traveled to or maybe even lived somewhere else and said, you know what, this makes a list. If you had to leave Costa Rica and go to another country and do it, where would it be?
Right. This is kind of one of my pet peeve subjects in a sense of I get irritated on this subject.
I'm so sorry.
And what I mean by that is actually you'll see I'll see all these magazines or let's say even like New York Times Travel or Yahoo Travel or CNN Travel or all these different things will tell people the 10 best places in the world to live. For expats and all this stuff. And I'll go through those lists and I'll go, are these people insane? Are these people, did the writer of these articles, did they ever once bother to actually travel to that country? Because I can smell bull crap a mile away from people. And you can see these people that write, they make up these, like, oh, it's like utopia living in this country. It's like, oh, really? Yeah, it's only going through a civil war on the southern side of the country, and it's about to be overthrown. I mean, come on, people. I mean, well, why? Because you think it had a great beach, that it's a great place to live? No, there's more to it than that. So there are a handful of countries in Central, and let's say in Latin America, that I totally and completely find absolutely no problem. Hands down, go and live. Everything's there. Total stability from a political standpoint to an economic standpoint to everything. Costa Rica, by far, to me, is the number one choice. But countries like Panama, countries like Belize in Central America are absolutely, I would encourage, or no problem. You could go into Latin and go down into South America. I'm very bullish on the country of Colombia. I'm very bullish on, you know, just yeah, a couple of countries there. But then there's a handful of countries that get really popular, or that you think are popular, or they get promoted as being a great right. place to go, which I would tell people absolutely don't know. Do not go there. So, and that's the same in the Caribbean as well. There's a lot of islands that are really good to live on. And then there's a lot of islands I would want no part of. So yeah, so there's always other options and other choices, just like in Asia and everywhere else. So, but don't my thing that I always like to stress to people is I see that it's so popular for these major organizations like the New York Times or Yahoo and CNN and Huffington Post Travel and all these things, they make up all these grand lists, and you can always tell when you're someone like me who actually does it and lives it and breathes it. When we read those articles, we basically just start laughing because we're like, this person's insane. You can tell this person never bothered once to actually go to this country or done a serious amount of research, because they don't have absolutely no clue what they're talking about.
Right. I really appreciate you sharing that, because you know what, you're right. People like me, let's say, who, you know, I looked on the list like, oh, why is Costa Rica the blessed place? I want to know when to ask about these things when we talk to Dean next. And, you know, those lists will come up, and, you know, and the biggest one too that comes up is why Costa Rica is the best place to go for a honeymoon. And so I was going to ask you, is this something common that you hear, that people go for their honeymoon? And that's like, I know you guys, when you went down, not that you're on honeymoon, when you and your business partner went down and kind of went, oh my gosh, is the place to be. Is that what happens to a lot of honeymooners? They go down, they think, wow, we've had such a great time. Now we can look at our next step of life together and invest.
Yeah, I can honestly tell you, when I first showed up in Costa Rica, I wasn't going there on my honeymoon and said, wow, honey, that was great. So it didn't work out that way. So 17 years later, yeah, I still haven't found my way to decide to be in Costa Rica for my own honeymoon. But Costa Rica is a popular honeymoon destination. There's a couple of resorts there that have global recognition for honeymoon. So yeah, it does have a couple of places
nice.
that very much specialize in the honeymoon aspect. So there's a lot of people that vacation why they're dating or whatever, they vacation. And then during their vacation, they start, you know, I mean, I'm assuming this is how it goes, right? You're sitting there with your girlfriend. You've been dating for 3 years. The girlfriend's starting to get a little bit antsy, like, okay, this is great. You know, Dean, you take me on these nice vacations, blah, blah, but when are you going to put a ring on my finger? And that conversation comes up while you're sitting on the beach. And then next thing you know, the guy's like, damn, I better ask her to marry me this pretty soon, or she's going to dump me, whatever the case may be, right? And Costa Rica is always a very popular choice for honeymoons, absolutely.
I was going to make a funny joke, because like the ring that they're going to get is a keychain ring, because now they have keys to their place. No, so
yeah, exactly.
You just mentioned global recognition, like, you know, for honeymoon destination. Is something like that a place that people can invest in as well, like a hotel? Like, can you invest it? Like, do you deal with people investing in the hotels?
No. I work with hotel groups to get situated, but I've never worked with a hotel group that specifically came or is open with the mindset of their target audience from a business plan standpoint, going after honeymooners. Most hotels, or the hotels that I work with in Costa Rica, you know, are all geared towards obviously the general just vacationers. But every hotel does have the option to do honeymoons. Every nice, I mean, every nice, decent beach hotel in the, you know, in any part of the world, is going to have the option to, or will cater to the honeymooners. But then you have some that are specifically geared towards that. That's what their target audience is. But, that's never been something that I've worked with. No. I'm afraid it would rub off on.
Right. And while we're on the, while we're on the topic of the celebrations of sort and everything, because we are going to be able to share a little bit of Christmas fun on this one, but tell me, like, do Costa Ricans celebrate Christmas? Do they go all crazy and decorate? Do they have certain events for Christmas? What do we do for Christmas there?
Yes, they go crazy. In Latin America, yeah, they kind of go crazy for Christmas. I always joke because you literally will see the Christmas lights and things. I mean, come February when I'm there, I'll still see the Christmas tree and the Christmas lights still up in some house. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, they are in Costa Rica right now. The lights have been up since the middle of November. And like I said, I mean, I'm not even remotely exaggerating here. You drive through some of the neighborhoods and stuff, you literally in February will still see the, you know, Santa out front. So they take Christmas very, in Latin America, Christmas is a very, you know, it's a big deal. And they celebrate it. And yeah, and same in Thailand. I mean, Thailand's actually very amazing, to be at during Christmas time, as well, because they really decorate it and they go all in. I mean, yeah, Christmas globally around the world is very, very much so, just like, we are here in the States. There are a lot of countries that get the exact same way.
Right, and they celebrate it on the 25th, like the same thing. So here's a funny question, because you mentioned about, I'm imagining all these lights and lit up and everything. Okay, Christmas lights. I know this dollar stores over here in Canada, well, they've got Christmas galore. It's just you can buy it anywhere. Do they have dollar stores in Costa Rica?
No, they don't have things like that, no. They have in Costa Rica, you have Walmart and stuff like that, but there's no, like, dollar store, like the 99-cent store, the dollar
right,
store.
Right, no, you don't need it.
Not sure. But they have small little, you know, small little typical, I mean, you have your regular box grocery stores and department stores like Walmart and stuff like that. But then, you know, inside the, you know, out in the neighborhoods and stuff, they have little mom and pop, you know, just convenience stores and stuff like that that sell those things.
Right. And I'm just highlighting this because we speak about how affordable living in Costa Rica is. So here, I know we get really excited because you're like, oh my gosh, dollar store. Let me tell you, nothing's a dollar in the dollar store anyways. Like, we have $4 items, $3 items, never a dollar. So that, but now I guess this highlights that Costa Rica doesn't need to have a dollar store because it is affordable and things are, you know, that cheap, basically, kind of thing.
Well, it depends. I mean, Costa Rica, let's say, is a country that has trade-offs. And what I mean by that is there are certain things in Costa Rica that can be a little expensive. If you want to pick, you know, if you want to pick up certain things and, you know, groceries or items, you know, there are certain things that will be expensive. Even more so sometimes than in the States. Like, if you want to buy electronics, you want to go buy a TV or get an iPhone in Costa Rica, forget about it. It's cheaper to get them. Oh. You know, they're a lot cheaper in the United States. And that's the same in pretty much a lot of parts of the world because they have to import them. But then you have to, if you're an American, like, I see Americans all the time that will go into some of these countries and go, well, that was so expensive. It's like, well, yes, of course. And you want to know the reason why. The reason that particular segment or sector of the economy is expensive is because of X. Usually X is because they have to import that. And that importation taxation is what causes that particular product to be expensive. But then you have to point out the flip side of it is you don't pay A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, Y, and all kinds of other things that you would be paying for in the United States or in Canada, but you don't pay in Costa Rica. So once you explain that, then people are like, oh, okay. Like, you tell, the easiest one I like to tell people is, or one of the easiest things I like to tell people is, it may be expensive to go do X, right, for something, but in Costa Rica, you can get your hair cut for $5. You can go to a movie in a brand new Cineplex, just like being in a beautiful Cineplex in the United States. You can go see, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, grand opening, you can go see Star Wars and literally get your ticket, a big box of popcorn and a large Coke. And you can do that for like $9-$10. Well, when I go and do that here in the States, that's $30, right? So there are things like that, that when you live in a country, there will be certain things, generally food product related, anything that needs imported, because a lot of countries, that's how they survive. They survive on importation tax, but then their personal income tax, their income tax system is very low. There's no capital gains tax. There's a lot of other taxes that are just non-existent that we should, you know, there's no property tax. So you're not paying thousands and thousands of dollars just on property taxes. So when you explain that to people, like, yes, that bag of Doritos is $4 and you could have maybe got it in the States for $2.99. You paid a dollar more. Well, okay, it's expensive. I get that. But guess what? You don't have property taxes. So it's like, really, you're going to complain about that extra dollar or two? So...
Yeah, I never knew, but actually, the next episode we do, let's dive into some tax-free areas as well, because I think that's interesting, and I want to recap that for next one. But question, because we're talking about shopping there and goodies and stuff, I know here when if we choose, or say we're shopping and we're going to check out and everything, and they say, oh, would you like any bags for that? And so if you do accept and say, yes, I'd like a plastic bag, we're charged 5 cents. First of all, in Costa Rica, do they have plastic bags or paper bags? Do you have the option, and do you have to pay for them?
Yes. No, you don't have to pay for any of that stuff in Costa Rica. No, they have plastic bags, stuff like that. But most people have the same, just like in the States, most people have their own, you know, personal carry bag that they carry and they bring in and out of the stores on their own. But they offer bags, and no, you don't pay for that.
Okay. And now I'm imagining, of course, now I'm in the shopping mode here. So I'm imagining shopping and everybody, you know, who they possibly have a car. Tell me about the transportation, because just as we wrap this show up here. So there, because I, you know, if I'm going shopping, I'm getting lots of groceries. I want someone to carry it. Do we have electric cars, gasoline cars, diesel cars? What's our mode here?
the country is on planet Earth, dear. It's not on another. Just because it's not Canada. They do actually have regular items all around the world here. Okay.
Right.
So they have cars. Yes. They have cars there. They have buses. They have cars. They have Uber. They have taxis. They have.
Oh, wow. They have Uber?
They got everything, like the rest of the world does.
I can't believe you said they have Uber. Oh, my gosh.
We got Uber. I mean, crap. I mean, most countries around the world have Uber in it. So it's like, there's taxis, Uber, buses, I mean, everything. And again, and when I talk about public transportation, as I'm sure Will has mentioned, when you're in most parts of the world, the public transportation system is 10 times better than what we have in the United States. I mean, I can take subways or trains and subways and systems all over Asia that just make everything we have in the United States look like a disgusting hot mess. I mean, riding the subway in New York to BART in San Francisco is a disgusting hot mess. I can, you go on these trains and public transportation systems and other in parts of Asia, it's like air conditioning, TVs, there's like no graffiti. It's they pump in fresh smelling potpourri I mean, it's like you're on the most pristine train in the world for public transportation. And you go get, you go to San Francisco, you get on the BART system, and it's like, oh God, gee, it smells like vomit. Smells like someone peed on the floor. There's 5,000 different graphic arts of graffiti. And oh my God, it's like, get me back from the other parts of the world.
Yes. Well, now that you've left us with such, I got you all fired up there. And we are going to wrap up this segment. However, next time we talk, I hope that we have this much passion and excitement, because between the beautiful potpourri smells of the train and everything, I can't wait back. I can't wait to get back to Costa Rica. So thank you, Dean, for this segment. And we shall see you the next one. I hope everybody loved today's show. Thank you.
Thank you so much.